Coming up, The Silence of the Lambs, verse 7. Movie battle begins now.
Welcome to Movie Battle. Each episode, superfans battle it out to see which film is best. Here's your host, Kevin Armstrong.
What is up, party people? Welcome to Movie Battle. I am your host, Kevin Armstrong. This is episode 13, The Silence of the Lambs, versus 7. These are two dark tales revolving around serial killers and their investigators. We will bring the superfans out in a few, but first, here are some facts and tidbits. The Silence of the Lambs is directed by Jonathan Demme. The screenplay is by Ted Talley, based on the 1998 novel by Thomas Harris. The Silence of the Lambs stars Jodie Foster, Sir Anthony Hopkins, Scott Glenn, Ted Levine, Frankie Faison, and Chris Isaac. It was released February 14, 1991. The Silence of the Lambs had a budget of $19 million and grossed a box office of $272.7 million. Silence of the Lambs has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 96%. Seven is directed by David Fincher. It was written by Andrew Kevin Walker. It stars Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, Gwyneth Paltrow, John C. McGinley, Kevin Spacey, and Richard Roundtree. Seven was released September 22, 1995. It had a budget of $33 million and grossed a box office of $327.3 million. Seven has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 82%. The Silence of the Lambs is considered culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant by the U.S. Library of Congress and was selected for preservation in the National Film Registry in 2011. The Silence of the Lambs became the third film ever to win the Academy Award for Best Picture, Best Director for Demme, Best Actor for Hopkins, Best Actress for Foster, and Best Adapted Screenplay. The other two were It Happened One Night in 1934 and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in 1975. Seven was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Film Editing. Orion Pictures partnered with Gene Hackman to bring the novel The Silence of the Lambs to the big screen. Hackman was originally cast to play Jack Crawford, but found the script too violent. The first choice for Clarice Starling was Michelle Pfeiffer, who turned the role down. Meg Ryan and Laura Dern were also considered. Sean Connery turned down Dr. Hannibal Lecter. Others considered were Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, Derek Jacobi, and Daniel Day-Lewis. The iconic mask worn by Hannibal Lecter was created by Ed Coverley, who has made several masks for NHL goalies. Filming began November 15, 1989, and wrapped on March 1, 1990, primarily in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and northern West Virginia. Andrew Kevin Walker envisioned William Hurt for Somerset, who was named after his favorite author, W. Somerset Maugham. Al Pacino, Robert Duvall, and Gene Hackman turned down the role for Somerset. Denzel Washington and Sylvester Stallone turned down the role of Mills. Christina Applegate turned down the role of Tracy. After a frustrating experience making Alien 3, David Fincher did not read a script for a year and a half. He was drawn to Seven, calling it a connect-the-dots movie that delivers about inhumanity and is a mediation on evil rather than a police procedural. They adopted a simple approach to camera work using influence from the television show Cops. A novelization by Anthony Broon was released in 1995. Zenoscope Entertainment published a 7-issue comic book between September 2006 and October 2007. In a review for Sight and Sound, John Rathall wrote, "Seven has the scariest ending since George Sleuser's original The Vanishing, and stands as the most complex and disturbing entry in the serial killer genre since Manhunter." Manhunter from 1986 is the first film to feature Hannibal Lecter. A sequel, Hannibal, was released in 2001. There have been two prequels, Red Dragon in 2002 and Hannibal Rising in 2007. Roger Ebert added The Silence of the Lambs to his list of the great movies, recognizing the film as a horror masterpiece alongside such classics as Nosferatu, Psycho, and Halloween. There you have it. We will be right back with the superfans. Welcome back to Movie Battle. Our first guest making her debut appearance is Tina Jaramillo.
Hi.
You're fine. Tina is from South Florida. She has a master's degree from Florida Atlantic University. She spends a lot of her free time volunteering with local activists to bring awareness and change to issues affecting the local community. Tina currently lives with her husband, two sons, and adorable puppy, Teddy. Tina is an English teacher in a local private school and co-host of the Muck Podcast, which covers true crime in the world of politics. Tina, welcome to Movie Battle.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So, Tina, this one's probably easier than some of the other guests we have on here, but how would your parents describe what you do for a living?
Well, they would basically just say I teach young people, teenagers, how to read and write and think, I think is what they'd say.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's funny. I've had many different jobs in my adult life. And 20 years ago, when I first got out of college, I was a substitute teacher. And they're still like distant family members on like my mom's side that, you know, we see them Thanksgiving. You're like, are you still a teacher, Kevin?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's awesome that you're doing that. We're very thankful for teachers, especially the year that we've had.
It's been challenging for the kids too.
Absolutely. My wife is a teacher, and we've got a whole setup, a whole thing going on here. And then the kids are in school, and when my wife's teaching, I'm having to help co-teach and do all that, and
it's
not as smooth as when mommy's doing it.
Yeah, it's a rough go, and it's tough for, you know, it's really tough for, I teach freshmen and I teach seniors, and for the freshmen, you know, incoming high school where it's supposed to be exciting and, you know, all the wonderful fall activities like homecoming and the football games and all of that that they don't really get to experience, and then our outgoing seniors are missing out on all of these final kind of high school moments. So it's really, you know, even though the kids sometimes are like, yeah, it's great being online, but they really do kind of miss engaging and missing these sort of traditions that they are expecting as seniors. So that's been a little hard for them.
Yeah, it's definitely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Well, Tina, who plays you in a movie about your life?
All right. Well, a lot of people tell me that I look like Sarah Silverman. Or like, I don't know if you remember this actress, her name is Annabella Scuria.
Oh, yeah.
So she played Gloria in The Sopranos, and The Sopranos is my all-time favorite TV show. So I would go with her as the person who would play me.
Okay. Yeah. Great actress. Jungle Fever?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Going way back.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay. she's great. Okay.
Yeah, she's a great actress.
That's an awesome choice. I love The Sopranos too. That's one of my favorites. I'm due for a rewatch of that as well.
Yeah, I just did a rewatch, and it's still as good as ever.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm thinking the beginning of next year if we make it that far.
Yes, fingers crossed.
All right, Tina. I always ask, what's your go-to movie snack?
So I love salty sweet. So I am currently obsessed with the chocolate covered pretzels or yogurt covered pretzels. Is like my favorite thing. So.
Yes, we are a big fan of those in this household. Somebody snuck those into the kids' trick or treat bags last weekend, but I don't. They didn't know about them, and what they don't know, they're not going to know.
That's great. Right.
Tina, you are a Silence of the Lambs super fan.
Yeah.
What is it you love so much about the film?
This is a film, I can watch Silence of the Lambs over and over and over again, and I can't get sick of it. It's beautifully filmed. There are these incredible shots throughout the film where, you know, these close-ups that just sort of slowly lean into the character's face. And it's like the framing. I really love that cinematography throughout. I love the pacing of the film as well. And it's this psychological thriller, but at the same time, we're sort of delving into the motivations of the characters in these subtle ways, which I love. So I love just the way the entire story is crafted and the way the suspense is built up in the film.
Wow. Yeah. Well said, Tina. How old were you the first time you saw Silence of the Lambs?
I think I was about maybe 16 or 17. I've always been a book nerd, so I read the book first. And I remember being really happy with the film, because a lot of times you read the book and then the film is just, you know, doesn't do it justice. And this was a film that I think really does justice to the book, and which is really rare. There are details that are left out. I believe, like, in the book, Clarice does a lot more of the detective work, and Crawford, we learn more about him. We get a more intimate look at Crawford's life with his wife being ill and things like that, that we don't get in the movie. But yeah, I was a teenager and I loved it. And I still watch it now as an adult. So, and it hasn't changed my love for it.
That's awesome. The Silence of the Lambs is great. I can't count. I mean, the many times I've seen it, if I've watched it that many times over and over again, so you being able to do that, that's true passion.
Yeah, it's just very good. I mean, even though I know all the lines, I know what's coming next, it's such a good film, top to bottom.
Absolutely. Tina, what is the message of Silence of the Lambs?
Well, Silence of the Lambs, I mean, I think there's a couple of things going on in that film. One of them would be definitely sort of a trust your gut, pay attention, because we have Clarice, who's this incredibly intelligent agent, and it's her methodical approach to everything that lends to her success. And so she's careful, she's not overly emotional. And so that's, I think, what kind of allows her to move through the process with Lecter the way that she does. And her ability to be vulnerable and honest. She gains Lecter's trust. There's just this real matter of factness about the character that I love. And I think it's something to sort of learn from and say, you know, that you can approach things in a way that is, you know, a little bit detached, gaining trust with people in order to sort of build relationships. And there's a moment where she's talking to Lecter and he asks about how Buffalo Bill gets his, you know, what he does with the skins, and she's thinking maybe it's trophies. And he's like, well, I didn't do that. And she just very calmly says, no, you ate yours. But it's, there's no disgust from her. I don't know. There's just this way about her that she's able to connect. And I like that aspect of the film, is her ability and that idea of being able to sort of connect with anyone and finding the way into the conversation and the dialogue.
Absolutely. Tell me, Tina, was there anything you didn't understand about Silence of the Lambs, or anything you would change?
Well, the one thing I think that I would change in the film, and I can't recall if the book may have delved into this a little bit more, but the film didn't. It's the entomologist that she goes to see, the two professors at the university. There's like this weird flirting. There's this weird, I don't know, moment between these characters. And then they show up at the end at her graduation, but there's really no development of the relationship at all. There's just like that strange flirtation, but you don't really know that they've talked or communicated. I don't know. It kind of feels like maybe there was more developed that was left on the cutting room floor that didn't get explored. But that would be the only thing, because it seems a little just awkward, that little piece of it. I think that she could have just got the info without, I don't know, the side conversation.
Now that you say awkward, that's a very good way to put it, you know, especially, you know, compared with the rest of the characters, you know, dealings with everybody.
Yeah. I mean, and we have these other characters that are, you know, when you talked about the message, you know, this, the intelligence of both Clarice and Hannibal, and that relationship is developed. And Clarice is, she's, you know, we see her development happen too, because she is trying to silence the lambs and thinking that if somehow she is able to sort of help these innocent screaming women, she can somehow, you know, silence the innocent screaming lambs, right? That from her youth, and somehow resolve that issue. And that, and Lecter kind of points that out. So I like that we see that sort of vulnerability with her. We see, you know, the pieces of Lecter, not so much of Crawford, Buffalo Bill, of course, but then like these other two guys, I just don't get her relationship with them. It just doesn't feel as authentic in terms of the way she is in the rest of the film, I guess.
Okay, well, Tina, you are definitely a super fan. Yeah. It is abundantly clear. And I hate to do this to you, but
yes,
you get one quote, one favorite quote to go out on.
Oh gosh. I know this is so hard, and I feel like I'm gonna have to like fall to a cliched quote, but I just love the "it rubs the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again." And I feel like everyone kind of has quoted that line, but you know, I think the thing that's real important with that quote is his use of the word "it." You know, he's dehumanizing her with the pronoun by not using her. And so we really get that, the idea of how he's able to do what he does to the women through that quote, right? Because he's just not thinking of her as a person. And by saying "it," so that to me is really important in terms of his characterization. So I love that quote.
That's great. Nothing like an English teacher to break down the quote.
Yes, I know. That's it's awesome. Like the English nerd is coming out.
All right, well, Tina, before we let you go, why don't you tell everybody about the Muck Podcast?
Yes, the Muck Podcast. We are a true crime podcast, but we delve into the world of politics. So we cover true crime on every level of politics, from your local, you know, school board official, superintendent, police chief, sort of all the way up the line to senators, and all sorts of crime, from, you know, racketeering, corruption, murder, everything and anything. If they did a crime, we're going to cover it and talk about it. And so it's a fun show, and we're always surprised every week at how the human nature, you know, this aspect of human nature and power and greed and what it does to people. So
awesome. Well, yeah, definitely need to go check that out. Everybody can get that on Apple,
yes,
Spotify.
Yes, we are on all the major platforms.
All right, sounds good. So check out the Muck Podcast, all your favorite podcast platforms. Tina, thank you so much. Best of luck in the movie battle.
All right, thank you.
Excuse me while I interrupt your movie battle for just one second. I've got a question for you. Do you like true crime? Blood, guts, gore, murder? Maybe you like nostalgia, you know, watching those old movies, or you see that guy and you're like, hey, I know that guy, he's that guy from... Well, if you do, once you finish movie battle, head on over to A-Side B-Side Podcast with Brooke and Adam. We'd love to have you.
Welcome back to Movie Battle. Our next guest is making his second appearance, Brad Wiggins. Originally from Middleburg, North Carolina, Brad is a film and television major at UNC Wilmington. He currently lives in Youngsville, North Carolina, with his wife, Meryl, and two children, Parker and Taylor. Brad is a corporate buyer for Dillon Supply Company. Brad, welcome back to Movie Battle.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Now, last time you were here, when I asked you who plays you in a movie about your life, you went with Jason Sudeikis. Are you still sticking with Mr. Sudeikis?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that now. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, people want to know. How are you rolling now?
Maybe David Spade.
David Spade. Okay. All right. Okay. There's nothing drastic about that change.
Nothing at all. They're basically the same person.
There you go. Okay. Okay, all right. Brad, what is your go-to movie snack?
Go-to movie snack. Currently, I'd say Jolly Ranchers or Skittles.
Okay, solid choices all around. Brad, let's get into it. You are a Seven super fan. What is it you love so much about the film?
Oh man, it's the end, the twist at the end. I can't think of a movie that has shocked the box. What's in the box? I mean, I'll never forget it the first time I saw it.
How old were you the first time you saw it?
Oh man, when did it come out?
95?
That would be 12 or 13, actually. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, here's the thing. I've been watching things that I shouldn't watch for quite a long time. So yeah.
I remember that because it was, I think, I want to say I was like a senior in high school, sometime around that. I remember The Usual Suspects and that both came out around the same time. I don't know if it
Right.
was the same time, but like they were
Same
both
era.
on, yeah, they were, I saw both of them on video at the time, and
Right.
both of them obviously great, great twists and stuff. Ironically, the
Same guy.
same guy. Yeah. Which actually, that's, he was, Kevin Spacey was uncredited in Seven, just so, that would, people wouldn't see the whole movie and then like, well, where's Kevin? It has to be Kevin Spacey, so
Right, right.
that was pretty genius that they did that.
That's right.
All right, so you're maybe not age appropriate the first time you see it.
Probably not.
What would you say you learned from Seven?
Oh man.
And we'll go cumulative, not just the first time you saw it, but as you, matured over the years and had repeated viewings.
Well, it's funny. Morgan Freeman's character in Seven, he was retiring. And he wanted to finish this last case. He could have let it go, and if he'd have let it go, who knows, what happened wouldn't have happened to either of them. Reminds me of a time I was in Vegas. No one to hold them, no one to fold them. I was actually putting my chips in the little carry tray to go cash out when I got dealt one last hand, and I thought I could do something with that last hand, and then lost everything. So that's it's pretty much that's what happened to Morgan Freeman, and essentially.
That's a very good analogy, and I'm sorry you had that experience.
It didn't deter me from poker. Still playing.
There you go. Okay. Way to get back on that horse. What would you say is the overall message then of Seven?
Overall message of Seven. Sometimes some things are better left unknown.
That's perfect. I couldn't say that better myself. Would you change anything about Seven?
Yeah. Nothing. Nothing. I feel like it's one of the it's a perfect suspense thriller. Great acting. Great writing. You're hooked right from the beginning. Great concept. Unique. Authentic. I wouldn't change anything.
Solid 10 out of 10, eh?
I give it 10 out of 10.
Absolutely. Okay, so Brad, you are obviously a Seven super fan, and I hate to do this. Every time, every guest we have on Movie Battle, before we leave, you get only one quote. What is your favorite quote? What's the best line from Seven?
What's in the box?
I mean, it's famous. Everyone knows that, and there's a reason why. It's a great line.
Oh
All right,
man.
Brad. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today on Movie Battle, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, thank you.
All right, party people. It's the moment you've been waiting for. Time for the movie battle. Up first, representing Silence of the Lamb, Tina Jaramillo.
All
Tina,
right. Thank
talk to
you
me.
so much. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit. I guess we'll start with this, the plot of this movie. It is incredibly compelling. We have the classic detective story, but it's not sort of your boil, the hard-boiled detective. We have a green detective who is an agent with the FBI who is up against this incredibly intelligent incarcerated serial killer, and her purpose is to track down a current serial killer who is skinning girls alive. So We don't know why in the beginning, why Buffalo Bill is doing what he's doing. We have this agent who is poor, ambitious, who is moving up and desperately wants success and recognition. We have clues sort of scattered throughout that are teased out throughout the movie that give us a little bit more about the motive for Buffalo Bill. And we have, you know, the incredible Hannibal Lecter. And I think the thing with this movie that makes it so compelling is we have an anti-hero with Lecter. And even though we know that he is a character who has, Dr. Chilton says, to Clarice when he's walking her down, that he started attacking a nurse's face and his blood pressure doesn't even go up. You know, we hear the stories. He tells her about the fava beans and the person that he attacked. And we know that he is this sort of vicious killer, but there is this sophistication and intelligence with Lecter that makes us sort of compelled to like him because he's sort of rooting for Clarice and we're rooting for Clarice. And I think that the character of Hannibal Lecter kind of paved the way for, you know, this is in the early 90s and, you know, late 99, we get Tony Soprano, who's like the epitome of the anti-hero who everybody kind of is rooting for, even though he's a sociopath. We have Dexter. And I think that this portrayal of Lecter sort of allowed those other characters to kind of, you know, come into fruition because of how much people connected to him. And then you have Dr. Chilton, who is, you know, supposed to be a respected professor, who ends up being really one of the most unlikable characters in the entire movie. And we have a cannibal and we have a serial killer. But, you know, the way this movie is developed, the people that you think should be good, we don't like at all. His arrogance, his sort of desperate attempt at sophistication stick out. And you pair that next to, like I said, the sophistication of Lecter, even in that sort of inmate's uniform, his movements, everything sort of oozes something higher than Chilton could ever hope to achieve. And so I think it's interesting that we have that sort of foil being actually someone who's supposed to be good, but really isn't because he's, you know, he breaches their privacy for his selfish gain. He, you know, is only out to really benefit himself. And we really see sort of that ugliness within that character. So I really think that the issue of the anti-hero is something that makes the film really compelling. I think the pacing of the film is just incredible. The end of the film, you know, when we, you know, the whole film, we see a very composed Hannibal Lecter. Again, we're told these little tidbits about the type of person and criminal and monster that he is, but it's not until, you know, he's in that jail cell at the hotel, and everything about that scene is incredible because he's waiting. We know that he's got the piece of the pen. We know he's going to escape. You know, they're building the anticipation of that moment. And when that officer enters, like very quietly, he says, you know, mind the papers, you know, and, you know, be respectful of my space. That suggestion pounces. And then the revelation. So the whole film, there's really no gore, you know, where it's teased out. And then the ultimate display of that cop completely gutted, hanging in sort of this crucifixion pose, where, you know, the shocking revelation of what he really is, you know, and we've liked him this whole, you know, time. And then it's like, listen, this is who you're liking. This is the monster that he is. And so sort of slow tease of that revelation is what I love about the film as well.
Excellent. Excellent, Tina. Brad, Seven?
Seven, one of my favorite movies of all time. For multiple reasons. I'm a huge Brad Pitt fan. Obviously Morgan Freeman is amazing. But the authenticity of the film, there's never been, in my opinion, a suspense thriller quite like it. Obviously it's about a killer that's reenacting or using the seven deadly sins to string these cops along And when I say string him along, is exactly what he does the whole time. It's so geniusly planned out that it's one of those films where you watch it a second time, or the more you watch it, the more you realize how this guy really was playing these guys. Like, it was no coincidence. Everything he did was premeditated. But my favorite thing about the film has to be he's stringing these guys along, and it's one of those films where you watch it the first time, and the reveal when Brad Pitt finds Gwyneth's head in the box at the end. I never saw that coming. I didn't see it coming. Second time you watch it, you pick up on more details on just how complex the planning would have to be from start to finish for him to have this thing unfold. Like I said, the more you watch the movie, the more details you pick up on, and the more it's put into perspective of just how detailed and how crazy the whole from start to finish, from the first kill to the head in the box. It's for everything to have fallen into place, isn't it? The guy was a genius. For each sin to manipulate and string these guys along like puppets, it's phenomenal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Tina, with Silence of the Lambs, if you were to compare it to Seven, as far as the, you host a true crime podcast,
Yeah.
and taking it from the agent's perspective, what if, say, could you replace, I don't even know, could you replace switch Jodie Foster and Brad Pitt in these movies?
I love Brad Pitt. But I don't think so. I think gender kind of played a big part in Silence of the Lambs. Like,
Right.
there's a few moments where, 'cause she's really little too. And there's like a moment where she's on the elevator with like all the other agents. So she's training, or she has to go see, it's in the beginning. She's like, gotta go see Crawford or something. And she goes in the elevator and she's so small. And I think like that idea is really important in the film too, that she's small. There's other issues of gender that come up when she's at the morgue, when she's in the call, when they first arrive, and sort of the men dismiss her, and Crawford kind of is like, oh, we don't want to talk about this in front of a woman, and she kind of takes offense by that. And I think that part's important in the film too. And I don't think Lecter would have connected in the same way, because he ends up kind of being into, I mean, the into her a bit. So I feel
Absolutely.
like, I don't know if Brad Pitt, even though Brad Pitt's adorable, I don't know if Lecter would have, I don't know if it would have
Okay.
worked.
Yeah, I like to, kind of mix it up a little bit around
Yeah.
here, kind of do little fantasy football trades, so to speak.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think, obviously, no. Well, first of all, I don't think another actress could do justice like Jodie Foster does. But let
Yeah, she's
alone
so good.
the changing genders on them. So yeah, that's gonna be a hard pass. Sorry I brought it up.
It's good. It's good.
All right, so Brad, with the seven deadly sins,
Yes,
are you
sir.
there? Sweet. Okay. With the seven deadly sins, which one, maybe, besides the head, which one did freaked you out the most?
Sloth.
You said you were
Yeah,
12.
the sloth.
Yeah.
When they opened the door and found the guy, and he looked like he was obviously, beyond dead, had been there, without food and water most likely, and yeah. And when he like gasped for that last breath of air or whatever, and yeah, that's something I can picture right now. I hadn't seen the movie in years, but I can see it right away. They had all the air, their little Christmas tree air fresheners hanging over the bed. That's some disturbing stuff for a preteen, early teenager for sure.
Now, both of these movies are, revolve around the agents, the detectives, Jodie Foster's character, Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt, but they're also known for their, the villain, the anti-hero, who are both, not in the movie that much. I mean, I mean, Anthony Hopkins is, sorry, Anthony Hopkins, excuse me, was in it for, I mean, how much screen time did he have? Was it even 20 minutes?
Yeah, I think it's about 15, if you put it all together,
15.
15, 20 minutes, something like that.
And he won the best actor. And then Kevin Spacey, obviously, he doesn't come in till the end. So how do you think that affects your, you know, your viewing experience, you know, I guess on multiple watches?
Well, for me, I guess it's just savoring the moments with Anthony Hopkins, because even though he's not in the film a lot, it feels like he's in the film a lot. The presence of him and the characters kind of hanging over everything. So when we do get the moments, they feel long, even though it's not. And it's, I think, different than Seven, because Seven is like this lovely reveal at the end, which I think is really cool. But this one, the reveal is more with, I guess, Buffalo Bill. But we're not as, not that we're not invested in who Buffalo Bill is, but you have like these two monsters, you know, at the same time. But I think Hector is the more compelling of the two.
I like how you use the word presence. I think that is a good overall theme for that character. Just, you know, he's just always there lurking.
Yeah, and I think Crawford even says, you know, you don't want Lecter in your head, you know, but he's sort of in all of our heads, I think, when we watch it.
Absolutely. And now Brad was Seven, you know, as they're, you know, getting the clues, do you feel a similarity?
Well, Seven, like, you know, the way, like Tina said, at the end you meet the killer. So you kind of have to, when you go back and you rewatch it, then you're picturing Kevin Spacey pulling the strings on all these murders and you know, stringing these cops along. So I guess it's a little different. Kevin Spacey, like you said, he wasn't in the film long, but I guess on the rewatches, the multiple viewings of it is when you can kind of picture him doing all the things that he did, you know, in the background.
All right, absolutely. So both of these movies are, you know, iconic, you know, films of the 1990s. And let's see, Silence of the Lambs is at 1991. They're timeless. It seems like that decade had just had a lot of, you know, you throw in these, you know, add Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, that's such a good movie, too.
You know, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, you know, True Romance. There was just a genre. It kind of started with the cult movie
genre.
Just going from those and then even getting to the, you know, the comedies like Office Space and Big Lebowski towards the end of the decade. Just 90s, definitely, I think you hit it right there with the cult films. These films, they're cult classics, but they're also, I would say, you know, big blockbusters as well. I mean, obviously, Silence of the Lambs, you know, won multiple Academy Awards. And Seven, you know, was, Brad Pitt was a star, but I think this kind of definitely got him, you know, if he wasn't already at that level, he got to that highest, you know, A-list right. level after this. And Morgan Freeman as well, you know, talking about 90s, I just said Shawshank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Morgan Freeman's an established star, you know, at this time. You know, he's been in things for decades, and then he, you know, he goes Shawshank Redemption, the Seven, and he just blew up. I mean, don't want to say it was an overnight success, but all of a sudden now he's, you know, a huge, huge star, and he's in everything, and he narrates everything now. And,
it's the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it is. So both of these movies are just very, you know, in that era, yet still remain timeless. You know, you know, Silence of the Lambs is, you know, you are a super fan, but if you had to speak on Seven, how would you, maybe not speak of as a super fan, but in comparison to Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah, I think Seven is a really great movie too. It's very gritty from the beginning. Everything is very dark in that film. Definitely more of the hard-boiled detective kind of, sense of it, because I believe Morgan Freeman's character is, you know, kind of like broken relationships, or there's something, you know, sadness, like from the life of being a detective, that's like eaten away at him. And Brad Pitt is like this young married guy, but you sort of see, like, you know, I mean, obviously the end destroys him, but in the beginning, it's like, well, he's going to end up sort of maybe on that Morgan Freeman path just because of the work. So there's just that sort of overshadowing kind of darkness on the detective that kind of goes back to like the old, I guess, film noir kind of feeling with like the detective story. But then, you know, like Brad said, there's this like incredible killer that has methodically thought out each of these sins that had to take months, if not longer, to put into effect. And so that part of it is intriguing. And then the whole sort of idea of, you know, instilling punishment on these people based off of sin. So I like that element of Seven too, that, you know, you have a killer that has a purpose. Buffalo Bill has a purpose, but he thinks he sort of wants to change into something, but there's something else at play. He's just, you know, I don't think it really is about him sort of transforming, even though that's sort of the reason he gives himself to do the horrible things that he does. But it's for sort of his own kind of, I need this thing from these women. In Seven, this is like, I'm punishing you because you have violated this, you know, moral, which I think is more compelling, I think, than Bill's purpose, as far as like killer motivation, I guess.
Absolutely. Well said, Tina. All right. Well, so both of these movies are, as I would say, 10 out of 10s. They are iconic. They just set the standard for not only their decade, but all times. You have great plots, great casts. Again, both had just an amazing impact on society, their time, their, you know, the professions that are portrayed in the film. And honestly, I can't decide. This is legit. This is the whole reason for these movie battles, is basically I can't make up my mind. I'm like, I can't decide. So I gotta, you know, put it out there, and, you know, I get the super fans out here. Sometimes we, you know, we gotta let the internet decide. On this one, is very good movies, and this, you know, you both make compelling statements about them. I want each of you to give your final statement on your film before we get out of here, okay?
Tina? All right. So I just think, you know, Silence of the Lamb, top to bottom, is a great psychological thriller. We are taken on the journey with Clarice to see her succeed in solving the crime. And at the same time, we get to see this kind of strange relationship develop between a serial killer and the detective. And I think that's a cool and almost realistic portrayal. We see like in Mindhunter that these detectives that go in and talk to these killers do end up having some sort of rapport with them. And so it's interesting to kind of watch that unfold and develop on the screen, in addition to hunting down this other killer. So you have, you know, the suspense, you know, the horror, you know, the pacing all building up to, you know, that at the end where then we're wondering, you know, is what is Hannibal Lecter going to do now? And what is Clarice going to do, pursue him or not pursue him? And so you're left on a lovely little cliffhanger as well.
Well said, Tina. All right, Brad.
Yeah. Seven. So first off, I'd like to give a nod to Silence of the Lambs. I'm also a fan of that film. I believe it probably has better acting in it than Seven. Unfortunately, acting isn't enough to let it win the movie battle. Seven, from start to finish, is a roller coaster. You know, there's never a dull moment. Once everything's set into motion with the first kill, there's no dull moment. There's no lull. Your hook, line, and sinker. You're in there, waiting for the next kill, waiting for the next kill, waiting for the next kill, and you know how many they are. So as an audience, you're watching and you're keeping count of it. So you're involved. You're basically a detective along with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman. So you know that last one's coming. You know it's coming. They capture him. They're driving down the road. You know it's coming. The suspense, the buildup, the climax in this film is. It's never been done before. I don't think it was achieved before or since. Morgan Freeman realizes what's about to happen. What's in the box?
That's a great way to go out. Now, it's great we had the, you know, English teacher, you know, speaking for Silence of the Lambs. I guess what you're saying is we should have had a math teacher for Seven.
Possibly. or keep yeah, physics, yeah. chemistry.
Yeah, the probability.
Statistics. Yeah, good job.
All right. Well, this has been great, guys. Tina, Brad, both of you are welcome back anytime. This has been awesome. I can't thank you enough for doing this.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Movie Battle. I would like to send extra thanks to our guests, Tina Jaramillo and Brad Wiggins. Much love to all for your continued support. As always, if you are feeling it, please recommend to a friend, share on social media, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. You can find Movie Battle on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for coming correct.